Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for October 9th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we'll tell you how neuroscientists are using brain scans to reconstruct what people have been looking at. And we'll tell you why people prefer apologies to cash when companies do them wrong. We'll also visit the wonderful world of insects with a story of how monarch butterflies navigate their way to Mexico during their fall migration. But first, Suzanne answers a listener's question about honeybees.
Listener John of Washington, D.C. has always heard that honeybees die after they sting you. But this sounds like kind of a raw deal for the bees, and he wonders if it's really true. So we gave bee expert Greg Hunt of Purdue University a call.
When honeybees sting you, they do die. They lose their stinger, and the stinger has barbs on it, so it gets torn out of their body and takes a little part of their guts with them, and so eventually they die in a few hours.
This might sound bad for the bees, but he says one individual bee isn't all that important to the overall colony.
You would think it would be better for honeybees if they didn't die when they sting you. However, the individual in a honeybee colony is expendable.
Of course, that's not the case for the queens.
Interestingly, the queen bee is not expendable, and she does have a stinger, but it doesn't have barbs on it. And the queen bees use their stingers to sting other queens. So actually, if I grab a queen bee, she will not sting me.
Yellow jackets, on the other hand, do sting people.
There's also yellow jackets, which are commonly mistaken for bees. Yellow jackets are a kind of wasp that usually nests in the ground. They're yellow and black, and they do not have barbs on their stingers. And if you've ever noticed this, they can sting you multiple times. I've experienced this. It's worse than a bee.
He says yellow jacket stings often hurt more because they can sting you so many times.
Thanks, Suzanne, and I know that from experience because I got stung 8 times just recently. And I don't know whether that was one yellow jacket or 8 of them, but it was no fun. Well, in friendlier insect news, monarch butterflies migrate by the millions from North America to the high plateaus of central Mexico every fall.
These butterflies can travel distances up to 4,000 kilometers to get from the northern part of their range in eastern North America to their overwintering site, which is a very small area right outside Mexico City.
That's neurobiologist Stephen Ruppert of the University of Massachusetts Medical School. He says the monarchs navigate using a structure in the brain called a sun compass.
The butterflies utilize what's called a time-compensated sun compass. And the way this works is that the butterflies flying during the day are using some aspect of the sun or the daylight sky as a guidepost. But that is a moving target because of the apparent movement of the sun across the horizon. In order for the butterflies to maintain a fixed flight direction and use skylight cues, they have to compensate for the movement of the sun. And so we know that the way they do that is to use their internal body clock or circadian clock. So they need a sun compass to sense the daylight cues, and then they need the circadian clock to compensate for the movement of the sun. And both of these entities appear to be distinct structures with distinct functions. And so we've been trying to localize where these occur, and the sun compass itself we know is in the brain. But to get back to the clock, the assumption was the clock's in the brain, and the discovery that we made is that the main timing mechanism resides in the antenna of the butterfly and not in the brain. And that was a really very big surprise for us.
Ruppert and his colleagues discovered this when they removed the antennae from some butterflies and put them in a flight simulator.
What we found is that the butterflies that didn't have their antenna were completely disoriented. Their group orientation pattern was all over the 360 degrees of orientation that are possible. So north, south, east, west, they were all over the place. Whereas the butterflies without their antenna manipulated were flying normally in the southwesterly direction, which is exactly what we would expect when they're headed towards Mexico. What we found was that it appeared the timing of the brain clocks was perfectly normal without the antenna. So this then really suggested to us the role the antenna might have is actually containing the timekeeping piece for this navigational capability.
Ruppert says with the help of the sun compass in the brain and the clock in the antennae, tens of millions of the monarchs successfully make the two-month journey every fall. They start arriving in Mexico during the first 2 weeks of November. Next, Justin Warner explains why sometimes an apology is better than cash.
They say actions speak louder than words, but when it comes to soothing dissatisfied customers, maybe not. This according to a recent study led by Johannes Abler of the Nottingham School of Economics in England. He teamed up with a company that sells 10,000 items a month on eBay. When a customer posted negative or neutral feedback, they were randomly given either an emailed apology or a small cash rebate.
And we find that if we send an apology, then roughly half of these customers withdraw their feedback later on, while if we send money, only about a quarter of these customers withdraw their feedback.
Oppler says doubling the cash made very little difference. Furthermore, the more expensive the original item, the less effective the money was.
So if they buy a TV, say, instead of something smaller, say a salt shaker, then offering them money doesn't influence their behavior. They don't like that anymore, or even less than before.
But apologies work just as well for big-ticket items as they did for small things. Abler suspects apologies must fulfill some deep psychological need, even if they're just emails from faceless corporations. As for the take-home lesson, that depends on whether you're a buyer or a seller. Businesses might note that apologies are not only free, but may work better than refunds or conciliatory coupons. Consumers, on the other hand, might do better to insist that an offending business put its money where its mouth is.
Thanks, Justin. Finally today, Suzanne's going to tell you about an amazing new way scientists are using brain scans.
What if someone could look inside your mind and see what you see? Scientists at the University of California at Berkeley have basically done that. They analyzed people's brain activity as they looked at thousands of random black and white photos. Then they developed a way to reconstruct what a person saw just from the brain scan. Neuroscientist Thomas Nazalaris says their model combined the physical shape of an image with its underlying content.
So that means, you know, if the target image showed a picture of a building, we would like our reconstruction to show a picture of a building. If the target image showed a picture of a face, we would like our reconstruction to show a picture of a face.
Their reconstructions weren't identical, but came remarkably close. Nosolaris says an even bigger challenge is to reconstruct imagined images, which are harder to pin down in the brain.
That is incredible. Thank you, Suzanne. And that is it for this week. Next week, we'll tell you why we don't necessarily turn to so-called comfort foods in times of emotional upheaval. And we've got a report on the lies parents tell their children. Until then, keep current on the world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition, every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.